Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
From hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 442. In this episode, Scott talks with Saran Yetbarek, creator of Code Newbie, a community of beginner and developing programmers.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and today I am chatting with Saran Yetbarek. You are the creator of CodeNewbie.org, which is a fantastic site. It's actually a community that you've started to support new programmers. Because would you consider yourself a newbie?
Yeah, I've been programming, I guess, professionally for about 9 months, graduated from a programming boot camp, so definitely a newbie.
So your background is not in computer engineering. You don't have a degree in software or computer science.
Yeah, exactly. I actually thought that I was going to be a doctor, and I consider that a huge bullet that I dodged. Thank God. But I did 3 years of pre-med. I went really hardcore with the sciences. I taught organic chemistry. I did biochemistry research. I was published. And then in my senior year, I shadowed a doctor for the first time, and I realized that I don't actually want to save human lives, which I feel like is important if you want to be a doctor. And what I really liked was the problem solving and the difficulty of science and the breaking things down and that stuff. So instead, I decided that I was going to be a journalist because I'd written stories and I'd done a lot of journalism throughout my college experience. And so, yeah, I graduated with a double degree in English and psychology, finished the pre-med track. And when I did journalism, I worked at NPR and I worked at Discover Magazine for a bit. And I realized that I liked that creative part. I liked telling stories and getting to talk to people and hearing about their lives and experiences. But that part of science that I loved was totally gone. You know, I couldn't be analytical. I couldn't break problems down. I couldn't do all that stuff. And so in that process, I ended up reading the Steve Jobs book, which got me interested in tech. And that was the first time I really thought of technology as a possible career option. And so from there, I said, okay, I need to get into this world. What is this world like? And through startups, I ended up at the Flatiron School. And now I'm a programmer.
So are you saying that it was the lack of creation? Like you weren't, when you were working as a journalist or doing these different things, you weren't making something, building?
Exactly. I felt like I wasn't creating things. I was observing other people create things and then spinning that into a story. And, you know, that's not to, you know, devalue journalism or writers or anything like that. I think they're great. I love it. You know, I love writing to this day, but it just wasn't fulfilling and satisfying to me.
Mm-hmm. Did you know that you were a builder early on, or did you literally discover you were a builder when you headed in the wrong direction?
I don't think that I knew what a builder was. My idea of building and creating was, you know, like Legos when I was a kid, or, you know, Barbie Dreamhouse and things like that. I didn't really understand what it meant. I didn't even know that it was an option to make things. My world was about either fixing things, you know, I consider doctors to, you know, mm-hmm. fix human bodies and such, and, you know, experiencing and observing, but I didn't understand this idea of having an idea alone and then building it into something that other people can use. Tech really introduced that concept to me.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't have a computer growing up, or you had like a PC around the house, but you didn't think about it as anything more than a utility? I'm curious.
Yeah, I think we got a computer when I was 9 years old, and that's really what it was. It was for consumption. You know, I used it to play a couple games and, you know, Word document to type things up, but that was pretty much it. And what's interesting is I think when I was either 12 or 13, I did one of those making technology more diverse summer programs for mostly African-American teens and young people. Mm-hmm. And I think I spent a couple weeks soldering. I built an LED battery-powered heart that my mom knew nothing to do with. And I did a little bit of coding and a few other techie things. Mm-hmm. But once that program was over, that was it. there was no one to kind of say, oh, if you like this, maybe you should be a computer scientist. Maybe you should be a programmer. There wasn't a next step. So for me, I got my little taste of creating, but I thought that that was a one-time experience, and I didn't understand that I could do more with it.
Well, are your parents techies?
No, definitely not. They're both pharmacists, and my mom still emails me about, or texts me about how to email things. So,
okay, so they're medical people, right? So this is why medicine seemed like the obvious kind of next step.
Exactly.
The program that you did early on, you said this was in high school, and, and it was focused on increasing diversity. It was focused on for people of color. Did you feel that that was necessary in the sense of it's something that is presenting an option, like, hey, here's a thing you maybe hadn't thought of?
I had no context for it. I didn't really, I mean, I grew up, you know, at that time I was, you know, in DC and I had a lot of minority friends. My neighborhood was very diverse. So I didn't really understand this whole diversity and tech issue as a thing. So that didn't really mean anything to me. But besides that, I just felt like it was this isolated thing that someone thought would be fun and interesting. And I didn't understand the purpose. I didn't really connect with the issue it was trying to resolve. And only now, when I look back at it, do I get what they were trying to do.
Right. So setting aside diversity and focusing on you as an individual, you're going through life and you're trying to figure out where your path is. You arguably find a little late, like, wait a second, I can build this, I can build that. But you've already got a degree, a double degree in totally unrelated fields. Was that like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm committed, I have to be an English major?
Well, I always knew that I probably wasn't going to get a job in with something to do with English. I did English because I just really liked it and I wanted an excuse to write. And so, no, I didn't really feel committed to anything liberal artsy. If anything, I feel like it's an advantage and it's a strength because in technology, you know, I think it's easier for me to write from an honest place. I think it's easier for me to blog. I think it's easier for me to speak and do a lot of those soft skill liberal artsy things that a lot of developers may not do quite as easily. So I think it's an advantage.
Did you think, I want to build, so I need to go back and get another undergraduate degree or maybe go into a master's program and kind of go from a BA into more of a MS? Or did you know that you wanted to find a trade school?
Yeah, I looked at all the options. I looked at, you know, possibly going back and doing another 4 years as an undergrad. I thought about getting a master's. And what I really wanted was I wanted an opportunity to try it and see how committed I was and see how far I could get with as small an investment as possible. And so for me, that meant doing a programming boot camp. So before I did that, actually, I did just a month on my own, learning to code, trying to see how far I could get as a way to test myself and see if I was actually serious about my own ideas and ambitions. And once I did that, I applied to the Flatiron School. And for me, that's gotten me very, very far. And from everything I've researched, that's about as far as I plan on going right now. So I did consider everything, but the boot camp felt the most realistic and just made the most sense for me.
How did you know a boot camp existed? Because I think there are still people who are discovering. I mean, I even think people who are listening to this podcast might only have a sense that these exist. And what's the difference between something like the Flatiron School, which is a very well thought of programming school in New York, and something like maybe a less well thought of trade school? Like, and again, not to disrespect anyone who has a degree like this, but your DeVries and your, you know, Computer Tech Institute type of degrees.
Yeah. So for me, the biggest difference between I found out about boot camps because I just Google searched. I searched, how do I learn to code? And through lots and lots of searches, Quora is also a really great place for answers. Boot camps became, you know, one of those options. So that's how I found out about it. And to me, you know, I don't know too much about DeVry and the more traditional trade school, so I can't really speak to that. But I can say that what appealed to me about boot camps in general is it felt very focused. It felt very applicable. It felt very purposeful. It wasn't, you're going to learn this because you think it's interesting and maybe it'll make sense to you and you'll get money from it. It was, no, you're going to make a career change. We're going to help you get there and you're going to be able to actually build real things. So the tangibility was very, very nice considering my two liberal arts degrees.
If I may add a thesaurus word, it was intentional.
Yes, it was intentional. There
okay. So these are focused programs that are some number of months long. How long was yours?
3.
So really only 3 months. I assumed somehow it would be 6-9 a year. Are there options or is it always just 3 months, get in, get out?
I think the shortest is 9 weeks that I've seen and the longest I think is 6 months. But on average, they're about 12 weeks. Yeah.
And what is it like? Is it just a big glorious hackathon? Is it just all fueled with pizza and caffeine and you all just pile in like the MemTV's the real world? Or is it a job like 9 to 5?
I feel like Boot Camp, the reality show, would be a really great idea. So no pizza, lots of coffee, definitely lots of caffeine. It was really intense. At the end of the day, I think that a boot camp is whatever you make of it. For me, you know, that was my life. I didn't see or speak to anybody until it was over. There was a pre-work that we have to do. It's about 100 hours of, you know, just the basics of HTML and CSS and Ruby and things like that. And I did the pre-work twice before I entered the program.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
And is this something you pay for, or is this like pre-homework?
No, this is just on your own. Pre-homework, yeah. And when I got to school, you know, the day started at 9 o'clock. It officially ended at 6, but most people were there, you know, until 9 or 10, sometimes midnight. So, yeah, that was entirely my life. I know that for other people, because they either, you know, were working part-time or had a family, they couldn't quite just put in the number of hours that I could. But, yeah, it was definitely full-time, 100%, and that's how you get the most out of it.
Okay, so as with all things in life, intentionality is so significant. I assume you told everyone that, like, I'm going into residency.
Oh, yeah.
Not the kind of residency that you want, mom and dad.
Exactly.
But the one that is going to have me successful on the other side.
Yes, yes. Everyone knew. I said, I'm starting this program. I'll see you next year, because it was like a fall program.
Right.
And hopefully I'll be able to build stuff then.
And is this 5 days a week or 6, 7 days a week?
5 days a week. It's open during the weekends too, and I definitely went in most weekends. Mm-hmm. But officially, it's 5 days a week.
So schools like this have different programs. You can go in and say, I'm going to do iOS, or I'm going to, you know, complete high school or whatever. But you did the, I'm going to be a production ready developer. And in this case, they focus on Ruby. Did you pick a school, or did you pick a language and then find a school?
I kind of did both. I think for me, when I did the research on what are good beginner languages, the two that I got were Python and Ruby. Mm-hmm. And I kind of ended up going with Ruby because most boot camps taught Ruby. And I also just heard really great things about the Ruby community and how supportive they are, and how a lot of beginners are starting there. So it just kind of, you know, kind of matched up that way. So the boot camps I looked at ended up being Ruby on Rails boot camps. Mm-hmm.
Now, I taught as an adjunct professor at a state school for a while, and one of the most challenging things is when I saw people, and there's no way to say this to be nice, but they just probably shouldn't be programmers. We tried, we loved them, we held them, we cried with them, but it was just like, I don't think you're wired this way. Was it the pre-work that kept that from happening, in the sense of someone who couldn't put in 120 hours of hard work as a prep for this, or did you have people drop out because it's just like, you know, programming's not for me?
I think we had, in our class anyway, we only had one person drop out of 44 of us. And so I think that for me, honestly, the very, very first time that I tried programming was actually a year before I went to the Flatiron School. Mm-hmm. And I tried MIT OpenCourseWare's, you know, Intro to Programming class. I can't even remember what the
language was. It's all self-study, just autodidact on your own.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I did it, I think, for like 2 weeks. I got through 4 lectures, and it was the hardest, most painful thing that I could have ever put myself through. And I got to a point where I honestly just felt like this just wasn't for me. Like, I got to a point where I said, I don't think this is made for me. I don't know what is wrong with my brain that this isn't making sense, but...
Seriously, God bless MIT OpenCourseWare, but if that's your introduction to programming, then yeah, it's not for me either. I actually have, though, this is a true story, and I'm embarrassed to say this, they're still on my iPad, like, since the day I bought the thing. Like, 4 years later, like, it's sitting in the, like, iUniversity thing. Mm-hmm. Every time I get on a plane, I'm like, I should probably watch that OpenCourseWare. It's pretty hard work. There's a brain for it. I don't have that brain. So I respect I respect that you did it.
I tried to do it. And so, yeah, so that was kind of my first taste of it. And then when I tried it again a year later, I had that experience of knowing that it was going to be hard, and I expected it to be difficult, and I expected it to be very painful. And so that wasn't as big of an obstacle for me anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I think that a large part of the wiring is more of just setting your expectations. And I found that for people who went to, you know, my boot camp and did the pre-work, they understood that, and they had already kind of started reshaping their brain. And then there were some who didn't do the pre-work and didn't have quite the right expectation and the right, you know, grit and discipline. And so I think it's not so much, you know, should you be a programmer? Are you born to be a programmer? I think it's more of, do you understand that this is going to be hard, and that's okay, and that's just part of the game? I think that's what matters more.
So that kind of brings me to my original kind of like loaded question, which is, do you think just anyone can be a programmer? There is no limitation, really? Like, the idea that it's some mysterious thing that only a special gifted few can do is just is just nonsense?
Yeah, I do think that anyone can be a programmer, but if that is scientifically not true, I don't want to know about it. Because I think that the moment you start saying, oh, it's only for some people, then it's really, really easy to hit a roadblock and think, oh, I guess I'm not one of those people, and to quit. Mm. So whether or not it's true, I like to believe that anyone can do anything, and that's just what I'm going to stick to.
Nice, nice. So then going backwards, should we be teaching kids programming at 6 years old, 12, 18? When do you start?
I don't know when the starting age should be, but I think it's kind of ridiculous that I have to take 4 years of history in high school, but I take nothing in technology.
Like, literally
nothing.
That's
just literally nothing. Yeah. Like, there's, you know, electives, I guess, but that's insane. And I feel like regardless of whether or not you want to do computer science, whether you want to be a programmer, I think it's just such a different way of thinking and a different way of analyzing everything that everyone should be able to experience that for at least a year at some point in public education. Mm-hmm. I don't know when that point is. I think the sooner probably the better. But I think it definitely should be required at some point.
So technology, that's a pillar, like geography and social studies
yeah.
and stuff. See, yeah, I've always definitely. Felt like another thing that was missing was like home ec. Like home, like, I don't know if you did that, but we're different generations. But like how to balance a checkbook, how to rent an apartment. No one teaches that. And you end up putting these like 25-year-old humans fully formed out into the world who like cannot boil water, make an egg, balance a checkbook, rent an apartment, or like do anything.
Exactly. Especially personal finance. That's another huge one.
Yeah. Economics.
Yeah.
That's
what that is.
First thing that they drop, right? So the fact that they're not teaching these basic skills, I think you're right. I think that becoming a developer or a builder or someone who can at the very minimum write a macro, not feel intimidated by the machine, right?
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, that's a really big thing because I feel like when you're used to using technology just to consume stuff, mm-hmm. you grow up with this barrier. You know, even now, I keep forgetting that I can just look at the code and figure it out on my own. Like, I have to remind myself that. And I think the biggest advantage to, you know, having a hacker mentality or a tinkerer mentality early in life is you get to interact and do stuff and manipulate and control and build in a way that you're not used to.
Yeah, my wife is becoming a nurse right now, and she's really struggling with the systems that are put in place by her school because they're really old. You've probably remember when you're in school, they're using Blackboard and all of these kind of weird little web apps that's literally like transporting yourself back to like 1997. And Chrome keeps updating every week. And then like, it worked last week. I'm like, well, Chrome updated. So she's like, well, Chrome needs to stop updating, you know? And my answer is usually, try a different browser. And she's like, well, don't you work on this stuff? Can't you fix this for me?
Yeah.
I'm really sorry, I can't. But as if she had the hacker mentality, those things suddenly become intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been going out of your way as a new member of the community to make it feel right for other people who are in the community, to make them feel welcome. Did you feel welcome?
I did, and I was very surprised that I felt welcome. You know, before the Flatiron School, I just heard a lot about the tech community and how unfriendly it was for women and minorities, and, you know, I'm a Black woman, so I was absolutely terrified. And I was really, really welcomed, and to this day, I've been, you know, receiving nothing but support and encouragement from my community. And I feel like a lot of that has to do with I entered through a boot camp, and I was kind of introduced through the community of that boot camp, and that community is already newbie friendly. And so, you know, yeah, and I think that was huge. And so,
so
a
then
lot
it's
of
friends of friends of friends. So everyone is being vouched for as you work outwards in the onion there for different layers.
Exactly. And so everyone else is going to be kind and friendly and supportive and all that good stuff. But the one thing that I guess I didn't like about it is I felt very privileged that I got to, you know, I think with learning to code, I ended up not working for 6 months because I took time off before the boot camp. And then I spent, you know, thousands of dollars on the boot camp itself. So I felt very, very privileged to have the opportunity to do that and to afford that. And the most valuable thing I got out of it really was the community. Like, that has carried me so far. And I didn't like the idea that people who couldn't afford to do what I did wouldn't have that community. And if you don't have it, it's really, really lonely and really frustrating to learn to code on your own. So I started the Code Newbie Twitter chat to provide that sense of community for people who can't necessarily get it from a bootcamp.
Yeah, bootcamps are surprisingly expensive. They clearly work, and they're clearly a business. You know, most of these are not nonprofits. But you're right. There's a gap between, hey, just go to khanacademy.org/CS or Codecademy or Treehouse or Pluralsight and learn in silence and alone, right? And then pay $10,000 or something for this to be injected directly into your brain. Where's that middle ground? Where's that middle ground?
Yeah, I think there are some companies that are trying to fill that space. There's, you know, the Viking School, which is doing an online program. There's Thinkful, which is doing like mentorship and online programs. I think Tea Leaf Academy is another one. So I think there's an obvious need, and I think that people know there's a need for some kind of middle ground. I think they're trying to fill it. So my way of filling it is to just start a chat.
Mm-hmm. So at Code Newbie, and this is N-E-W-B-I-E, not noob like N-O-O-B. And we'll put links in the show notes. You've got a Twitter chat. Now, Twitter chats are interesting. Do people need to sign up for Twitter to see these chats?
Not to see it. I think you can search for the hashtag and anybody can, you know, just be an observer. But to participate, you do have to be on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. And Twitter chats are kind of a recent last couple of years feature. It's basically not a feature of Twitter.
Yeah.
It's just everyone agrees to use this hashtag, in this case, Code Newbie, at a certain time. You say it's on, what is the day?
Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern time.
Okay, so Wednesday nights, so then anyone can get involved, West Coast or East Coast, and presumably, of course, people overseas if they're awake. And if everyone agrees to say hashtag Code Newbie, y'all can have some pretty compelling conversations.
Yep, yeah, exactly.
Has this started into a new community of people that you've met, or is it mostly just people that have gone through your programs?
It's funny. Initially, I thought that it would be filled with, you know, new developers like myself who graduated or, you know, recently graduated from a bootcamp, but it's actually not. A lot of the people that we have are split between more experienced developers who want to give back to the community, and then the other half are people who are even newer than I am who are mostly just using Code Academy or Code School or, you know, or in, you know, some neighborhood or town where there's just not a big developer community, and Code Newbie is their way of being part of the tech community.
On your Twitter account at twitter.com/codenewbies, plural, there's some really cool stories that you are retweeting. People saying, you know, hey, I met my goal of 10 hours of development this week to really find out like what that's like. You know, I started in Ruby this week and I coded for, you know, full 10 hours. That's pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, it's great to see the things that that they build and they're excited about. I mean, people blog about what they work on. We had one person working on an app for Ferguson, and we've just had some incredible work there. And it's exciting because you get to celebrate the little wins, right? A lot of times, I think a recent tweet was, you know, this is kind of embarrassing, but I finally got this really simple Ruby script to work, and everyone in the Code Newbie community retweeted that and favorited that and said, you know, this is great. You should totally own this win. So it's a place where even the things that may not seem too exciting are celebrated and encouraged.
It seems like when someone's been in the industry for 5, 6 years, even 10, or like in my case, 20 years, those little achievements, you know, oh, I got my CSS to do a rounded corner, or I figured out how to do this in full screen mode. People like me are like, oh, you guys. But you have to look at it with the same kind of wide-eyed excitement, because this is an entire universe that people are discovering that we, people who are inside, you and I, totally take for granted.
Yeah, I remember the very first time I learned CSS and I turned the background yellow. Blew my mind. Just blew my mind. I was so excited that I turned the background yellow, because for the first time, I was controlling the computer in a way that I never had. And so, if anything, I see the handle and the site as a way to just be a cheerleader for everyone and to just say, like, all those little steps you're taking, you're on your way to somewhere really important and really big.
I think that so many people just don't understand that, like, hey, you push a button on the remote control, TV turns on. Yeah, you know, what happened there? I think there's a mindset. I always call it the taking apart the toaster mindset. Mm-hmm. Like, there's people who make toast, and there's people who, like, make the toast. I'm like, how the hell did that thing make toast? And then they start taking it apart, you know? And you, some people come built in that way and they take stuff apart, but other people, you really need to take something apart in front of them and go, look, now here, you put this back together. Yeah. And when you do that on the web, like you said, you change some CSS. One of my favorite things I'm going to do this weekend at a conference called BlendConf is teach a bunch of middle schoolers how to surf the web from Telnet.
Oh.
Like, you have to go into Telnet, open the socket to port 80, type get httpcnn.com and hit enter.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're like, wait a second, there's an underneath.
Yep.
You know, it's almost like showing them the basement. Like, look at all the cool stuff we have in the basement.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So what are your plans for Code Newbie? Right now it's a Twitter chat, it's a website, it's a mailing list. What's next?
Yeah. So one thing that we're doing, the podcast. When we actually recorded our first episode, hoping to do a couple more. And I'm really excited because, you know, I listen to a lot of tech podcasts and I'm a panelist for Ruby Rogues and it's great, but a lot of times I feel a little bit lost because a lot of the topics are complex. The guests that we have are definitely experienced programmers. And so I really like the idea of having a podcast just for newbies and directed at newbies and focusing more on the journey of coding and less so on kind of, you know, the end product, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I'm really excited about. The other thing is we have so much information and so many resources being shared on Twitter. And it's great to see that energy and that support in the community, but it's also frustrating because Twitter like goes away. You know, the tweets kind of evaporate in just a couple hours. And so I'm really looking forward to starting a discussion board and kind of moving the community to a place where you can go back and reference the resources that you share. So those are my two really big goals.
So thinking about maybe like forums or something like maybe Discourse, which I think is a Ruby application?
Yep, exactly.
Very cool. So people will be able to look at this, of course, at codenewbie.org. For your personal journey, are you programming professionally now? What are your plans? What kind of things are you building now that you can build?
Yeah, so it's funny. I'm literally in between jobs right now. So I just finished a 7-month residency at the New York Tech Meetup, which is the largest meetup organization in the world focusing on technology. Yeah, we have over 40,000 members at this point.
Wow.
And so I spent the last 7 months building a platform with one other developer. We pretty much did everything ourselves. It was incredible, especially as a first job for a programmer. And then in a few months, I'm going to be starting at Thoughtbot as a developer apprentice. So the next couple months are kind of focused on me building out Code Newbie and really ramping up on my skills and, you know, doing a lot of stuff for the community.
So you said developer and apprentice, which is interesting because I've had a gentleman on the show a couple of weeks ago who talked about what it means to be a junior engineer. And I found there's a certain amount of entitlement, I think, amongst computer people. You may have come upon folks that are like, hey, I've been doing this for 3 years. I'm a senior engineer. Like, and also technology is moving so fast. Some of these technologies have only existed for a year.
Mm-hmm.
So there was like that joke. What's the name of the new technology that Apple came out that it replaced Objective-C?
Swift.
So Swift comes out. And then like the next day, like you go to monster.com and it's like, I'm looking for a senior Swift engineer with 5 years experience. Things move so fast. You know, who is a junior engineer? Who is a senior engineer? And when you're an intern, do you feel bad about being an intern? You're like, I'm just an intern. Or do you think this is an amazing opportunity? How do you take that?
Yeah. So when I worked at New York Tech Meetup, I felt like I had way more responsibility than anyone would ever give me at that point. And so, you know, it was interesting because I felt like it was a great opportunity to prove myself and to, you know, show everybody what I could do and all that. But I also learned everything the hard way, right? Because there's no senior person to say, oh, I've tried this before. Maybe you should do this and not that. Or that gem is totally awful. Do this and use this instead. And so without that, you're kind of testing a lot of stuff and you're starting from scratch over and over again. So I'm really excited, honestly, to be in a more junior role, you know, as far as official titles go, because I've learned that I need to be a student more. You know, I think that I would learn more and get a lot further by having someone more senior than me kind of guide me through a process than I would just continuing to hack along. So it definitely showed me how far I can get and I'm really proud of my progress. Mm-hmm. But I'm very, very happy to be back in more of an apprentice role.
How do you separate the non-technology specific concepts in your mind? Like, for example, if I were to go work on New York Tech Meetup, Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, I've been in the industry 20 years, but I would probably work for you because I don't know Ruby and I don't know Rails, right? I mean, I have a general understanding. I've read some books. I've done a couple of projects. So I've got a systems architecture background and I can build large systems and I know how at a theoretical level those things work.
Yeah.
Which you may not have, but at the same time, you know, so how do you think you and I would work together? Would I work for you or we'd work for each other? We'd be peers. Yeah.
I think however we worked, I think you and I would have a blast.
That is clear.
Yeah. But, you know, I think that we'd actually complement each other very well because what I found interesting about that was it wasn't the coding that was hard. Like, actually getting things to work was not the hard part. That part was actually fine. The hard part was understanding what features should take priority, what order to do them in. How long do you, you know, bang your head against a wall before you move on to a different solution? It was product development issues. It was decision making. It was more of that stuff than it was anything language or framework specific.
Really?
So what I'm, yeah, definitely. And it was also, you know, and this is a skill I totally underestimated. It's also talking to non-technical people, you know,
my life,
which I, you know, when, you know, Jessica Lawrence, who's the executive director, you know, it's a very small office. It's just her, one other person, and then the two developers. And we would meet every week and touch base. And I was never quite sure how much to explain, how much I should be telling her, how much she cared to know. It was very, very uncomfortable. That alone is a skill set I would love to learn.
That is
you.
A really interesting, yeah, because it's like, I'm going to use this gem. Like, you know, I don't really care. But,
right.
but at the same time, there might be licensing issues.
Right.
What do we as an organization use as far as our open source license? Do we not want to bring in GPL code? Whatever.
Right. And even things like, you know, oh, this feature will take a couple days to build. Oh, it took 2 weeks. Okay, now I have to explain why. And if you don't know the, you know, the tech behind why, then nothing I'm saying will make sense and you might think I'm an idiot. So it's really important to know how to talk to the non-technical people.
Very, yeah. Very cool. Well, it's just an absolute joy to talk with you, Saran Yitbarak. You can check out Saran at codenewbie.org. We'll put links to their Twitter chat, their website, their podcast, which will probably be out by the time this podcast is out, and as well as being able to connect on Twitter. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.